Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. Our program is a little different from our regular fare. We're going to take a look at a major problem in today's justice system: jail populations and overcrowding. My guest today is Alan Kalmanoff. He is the executive director of what I call a think tank, the Institute for Law and Policy Planning. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon. I'm happy to be here.
Maybe we could start with a little background. Can you tell us something about your organization?
Well, the Institute was organized in 1979 from a group of lawyers that were involved in criminal justice activities.
Are you still with us? Well, unfortunately, we seem to have temporarily lost Alan Kalmanoff. Alan, are you still with us? No, he's not. I think what I'll do is go to Plan B and play a little musical interlude. This is Jamie Michaels. He has just released a new single. It's called Black River, and all of the proceeds are going toward the recovery in the Gulf.
My father's grandfather made his way down to the sea. He sailed halfway around the world from the shores of Italy. With nothing but a face and how his life would be. He lived in a time when dreams were to be believed. My father's grandfather labored each and every day. Not till the sun kissed the horizon would he put his nets away. Heading for the home they'd built in this new land. Following the stars to the shores of Louisiana. Cast your prayers upon the water when the moonless nights have come. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the Black River runs. My father's grandfather taught his son all that he knew. Take only what you need. Take pride in what you do.
Not working.
Okay, I do believe we have Alan back on the line. Alan, is
Hello,
that you?
Simon.
Yeah. The joys of technology. What can I say? Incidentally, if you missed the introduction, that piece of music is called Black River. It's by Jamie Michaels. And it's a very, very pretty little song. Anyway, you were telling us about the ILPP.
Well, and I'm not sure where I was cut off, but we've done about 400 jobs over 40-plus years, almost all of them involving change, some struggle in the criminal justice system causing a jurisdiction to hire us to try to solve problems that are associated with proposed or real change.
And you've been around since, I think you said, 1979?
Yes, as a as an organization, doing that kind of work for a few years before that as well.
Whereabouts is home base?
Well, we're in Alameda County in Northern California, and but we have more or less a national practice.
Please forgive me if my questions seem simplistic, but I'm not sure that too many people really understand the current situation. I read articles, I won't say every day, but certainly on a weekly basis, about jail overcrowding. And I sit back and I think about it, and I come up with three possibilities, three possible reasons why we are faced with overcrowding. Number one, the crime rate's going up. I've got to admit, I'm not sure that is entirely true. However, I'm sure it is true in certain areas. Number two idea is that facilities just have not kept up with the population growth. I mean, that's a distinct possibility. I look at many cities and, the road infrastructure, for example, hasn't kept up with the population growth. Or number three, there are other elements at work. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the crime rate not only is not up, it's down, and it's been going down for a long time, and it's been going down significantly and seriously for a long time, and that's totally adjusted to the population, and it's just not at all the cause for jail overcrowding. Second, you suggested that perhaps facility construction of new facilities has just not been keeping up. But the true fact is that in the last 20 years, there's been the largest building boom of correctional facilities in the history of the world. And so that's not it either. The real underlying cause of crowding in the criminal justice system, or what we like to call bloating, is the increasing failure of management and administration of the criminal justice system to keep up with normal population growth. Even though there's been a decline in crime rate, such that case processing ends up being, slow case processing ends up being the ultimate cause of jail crowding. Now, there are other reasons that contribute and fold into that. For instance, the criminalization of minor crimes. Certainly, marijuana, which is virtually legal in some jurisdictions for many, many years in the last 30, has been a major cause of arrests and jail crowding. But the case processing is the foremost cause. The slowness of the time from arrest until disposition, and usually the bulk of that is in the courts, but major delays occur at every stage.
Okay, so essentially, your function is to try and streamline the judicial process.
It is, and it needs to be spoken out loud that these different agencies, many of whom are part of different or overlapping jurisdictions, are all in the growth mode. The unions and the economy of the last 30, 40 years in this country have given rise to kind of a grow-your-own-business philosophy in the criminal justice system. So every police department wants a new car and more officers, and every prosecutor wants more deputy district attorneys and so on through the system, always you always hear the need to solve jail crowding is with more courtrooms and more judges rather than more efficiency and management in the courts, and that's the theme throughout the system.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a question that I know is grossly unfair, and it's completely outside the scope of our discussion, but yeah, it's never stopped me before. I'm just looking for your comments. My wife and I have been reporting on a Florida case for what seems like forever. The unfortunate death of the young toddler, Kaylee Anthony. Her mother, Casey Anthony, stands accused of the crime. She was first arrested, I think it was in October 2008, and her trial is scheduled to begin in May 2011. That's a 2.5 year gap. And 2.5 years where she's sitting in a jail cell, effectively in no man's land. Is this the kind of situation that you're trying to solve?
No. That case, and usually one or two every year or so in most jurisdictions, maybe not as notorious, are the outlier case that have really nothing to do with jail crowding or the causes of jail crowding. Whenever you have a homicide, whenever you have a controversial or public interest kind of a case, all bets are off as to the delay in the procedures. Moreover, if you think about it, the kind of crime that is, the sentence, if there was to be a conviction, would be much longer than the year or two in jail waiting for trial. So it's not indicative of everybody waiting for a trial. It's much more indicative of homicide cases and very high interest, public interest, high profile kinds of cases, which are almost unpredictable in terms of their outcome because there's a lot of political factors that enter into it. If you're on nightly TV, every public official involved in the case is looking for either publicity or looking to avoid publicity, et cetera, et cetera.
So, obviously that there's not a 1,000 Casey Anthonys in every county. The type of person that's causing the jail overcrowding is someone that's got busted for marijuana or prescription drugs, that kind of thing. With nonviolent crime.
Well, yeah, there's a big problem in the criminal justice system because jail beds should probably be used first and foremost for people who are a danger to other people and need to be locked up to avoid more danger, whether it's pretrial or post-sentence. But in fact, most jail inmates are minimum security, lightweight offenders who are not a danger to anybody. They're just a pest or an annoyance or a cause of anger. And so the typical jail inmate is a dual diagnosis misdemeanor, somebody who's got a drug and alcohol problem, mental health problems, is been in and out of jail as a chronic offender, but always for the kind of quality of life crimes, urinating on a tree at 3 a.m, making a lot of noise, causing a ruckus, smoking marijuana in a park. Huge number of lightweight crimes, and there are many counties, I could name one even, where the public defender's policy has been not to see that inmate for 30 days. Which means the inmate doesn't get out because they're a repeat offender and they don't get representation and there isn't a plea bargain early in the case, and it's an enormous source of jail crowding for people who are probably not only not impacted well by jails in terms of recidivism, but maybe these kind of jailings rather than providing programming causes more crime. It's hard to know.
Yes, and I'm sure that I could play devil's advocate here and say, oh, so you're advocating being soft on crime, but I don't.
No, I'm actually advocating being hard on crime. It's not soft on crime to give somebody three hot meals and a three hots and a cot, they call it, and a cable TV to watch all day. That's not as much a punishment for a pretrial inmate of a minor crime as labor in the community to help repay society for the behavior. Work crews that don't cost the taxpayer anything and help the inmate immediately repay his or her debt to society. I'm much more hard on crime in the current system by a very large margin.
I actually knew that from some previous discussions we've had, but I did want to bring that point out. You know, because it's easy to go, oh, well, this Alan Kalmanoff guy, he just let everyone go. But no,
I've been called soft on crime my whole career, but if you look behind the allegations, it's the other way around.
Right. Do you tend to work at the city, county, or state level?
Well, I've worked at every level. I've worked for the U.S. Department of Justice as an expert consultant in narcotics and dangerous drugs, and I've been a federal master and a federal monitor over major prison systems and major police departments. But the bulk of my work is at the county level, where I feel real change is much more possible, and also the large numbers exist there. Federal courts and federal criminal justice activity is involved with a very, very minuscule number of cases. And yeah, state cases are also very, very tiny. The overwhelming bulk of the crime and justice issues in this country and the numbers of cases are at the county level, fed to the county by cities and villages and towns.
Okay, so let's say I'm a county supervisor or whatever. My jails are jam-packed. The walls are beginning to bulge, but there are absolutely no funds in the coffers to build bigger facilities. So I call in the ILPP. What can I expect?
It would be different for every county, and the values that locals have for crime and punishment in every county, because we don't like to come in and dictate solutions based on our own values. But generally, you could look, say, at our last significant job of that type, and you'd get something like that. I'll give you an example. This was Dane County, Wisconsin, the city of Madison, the state capital in Wisconsin. A mixture of liberal and conservative and university elements and dairy industry. And they had, when we got there, 140 inmates that were in rented beds all around the state and other counties because their jail was so crowded. And they were 20 years into a debate about whether or not a new jail they couldn't afford. Their old jail was actually more than one jail where it was very crowded. And that's why they were renting beds in other jails to house their inmates. And to make a long story short and get to the bottom line so you can ask more questions, I'll just say it ended up with all 140 back in Madison. It ended up with a lot of empty beds. The jail, whether or not a new jail debate was totally put to rest, there is no debate any longer. They don't need a new jail. And $5 million previously spent on shipping those inmates out of county, renting beds, and providing no programs but a lot of transportation back and forth, was put into the social services and homeless budget of that county, much to the pleasure of the local politicians.
Oh, I think that is a wonderful solution, wonderful resolution. Human nature, though, always has a resistance to change. My background is not the... not the legal world, it's not the justice world, it's actually technology. And I remember a delightful story. It was, from the early 70s. I installed a new computer system for a company by the name of Tetley T. They're still in business. You can find Tetley tea bags in your local supermarket. Anyway, I plonked down this what was called a CRT, the forerunner for a personal computer on this lady's desk. And she looked at me as if I had three heads and came from Mars, pointed out that at home she didn't even turn the TV on. That was her husband's job, and she certainly wasn't going to be about to start messing with TVs at work. Do you find resistance to change in your operation? Uh-oh. Alan seems to... let me see if...
Can you hear me, Simon?
Yes. Are
you
there, Alan? Okay, I was telling a silly story. I won't retell it, but do you find resistance to change? I mean, it is human nature. You know, people do not like change.
Well, around our office, we like to use the expression, nobody likes change but a wet baby. And it's typical of all the jobs we do because people have an investment in the control and predictability that they imagine they have over their daily affairs. And anybody coming in to say, let's paint the office a different color, threatens that predictability and control. So it's very, very typical of the work we do. In fact, I hate to work around my house because, you know, around my office and home community, because there's always resistance, and it's much easier to be objective and effective when you're far away.
You've mentioned working, you know, at the city, county, state level. Do you ever actually work with the police directly?
All the time, yeah. Every study we do requires some work with the local police because they're the butlers or introducers to the criminal justice system. People don't get into the criminal justice system unless they're stopped by a police officer or arrested. For the most part, very few are brought in by indictment by prosecutors alone. And so I started off with the Oakland Police Department when I was a young man, spent 2 years there. I also sued the Oakland Police Department at one point. And I have a high regard for policing, and a lot of the work we've done is police departments. In fact, I spent 10 years training police officers around the state of California for the Department of Justice.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you have had an illustrious career.
I don't know about illustrious, but it's been long.
Right. How large an organization is the ILPP? Is it relatively small? 20
we have about
people?
About 35 people overall, kind of a core office staff of 10 and about 25 consultants, some of whom are in outlying areas to us, not in Northern California, but as far away as Denver or Wisconsin. And we put together teams of those consultants with our core staff to do the jobs we do, so we can do many at a time sometimes.
And I think you mentioned you've done something like, 400 in 40 years. So it's about 100.
Yep.
That's 100 a year. That is a lot of work.
Yeah, but I don't think it's 100 a year.
Ah, okay.
I think it's 400 over 40 years. But anyway, it's a lot of work, and we've been in a lot of places. Worked as in the Deep South, Montgomery, Alabama, Birmingham, Tallahassee, all over Florida. We've worked in the Midwest, Omaha. We've worked in Salt Lake. We've worked all over California. We have a lot of experience.
Yeah, you're right. My math was completely wrong. And odd to believe that math, is normally my strong suit.
Normally my weak suit. I'm surprised I spotted it.
Right. Obviously, this is one of those how long is a piece of string questions. And, you know, earlier in the interview, you mentioned Wisconsin and saving $5 million. Is that the sort of cost savings that a city or county might realize?
It is. I'll give you some figures off of one of our summary charts and see if it covers it. It looks to me like we've saved counties over $1.5 billion in the last 17 years just by adding up a bunch of jobs that were typical from 93 to 2010. Looking at Allegheny County, $100 million. Looking at Jefferson County, Alabama, $4 million a year, every year since we did the job, things like that. So there's an awful lot of savings.
In today's tough economy, but those are significant numbers.
They certainly are.
I'll bet people are just banging your door down.
Well, I haven't seen that happen lately. I think there's a lot to be said for the instincts of people who run criminal justice systems to protect their growth, just like any business. And there's a lot of instincts on behalf of local politicians to not touch the criminal justice system either way for fear of being in the lens of the law and order advocates who claim that more criminal justice means more public safety. And others who are fighting the other way. It's such a polarizing issue that the politicians like to stay clear or promote growth. And the folks who run the system, I've never seen one yet who wanted to get out of the business by cutting it in half or something.
Right. That's a surefire way to find the exit door. Oops, I don't have a job anymore.
Exactly, exactly. And the other kind of instinct is very strong, which is people who come up through a police department or come up through a court don't envision smaller being better. They envision a larger span of control being a promotion and better salary. And that's at the worst. At the best, they envision a larger growth in their agency as being good for public safety. But that is absolutely not the case.
The whole judicial system is a complete mystery to me. You have state authorities, you've got these county authorities, you've got city authorities. In my mind, it looks like there could be a lot of reinventing the wheel going on. Am I seeing that incorrectly?
Well, I'm not sure if I can relate to reinventing the wheel, but look at it this way, Simon. It's a tall pyramid. There's very, very few cases going on at the top of the federal system. The bulk of the cases are down at the bottom. It is true that at the bottom, at the county and city level, the basic procedures of arrest and pretrial appearances and plea bargaining and pretrial release and all kinds of procedures that go on as the case wends its way through the system are pretty much the same. They're similar. Reinventing the wheel, yeah, there's innovation in some places. There's a lot of innovation in some places. And it does get passed around. I was at a conference last month in D.C. where I saw tremendous evidence of innovation because of these budget problems going around the country. So I don't know about reinventing the wheel so much as that the commonality of the procedures is very similar in every county.
Okay, I'm going to ask a very unfair question, and
I'm getting used to your unfairness.
I specialize in them. I lay awake at night thinking up unfair questions. I'm a little bit concerned that one of the reasons that jails are so full is, does the time fit the crime? That there's this infamous three strikes law. And again, I won't say I read stories every day, but it's not uncommon to read a story where someone has fallen foul of the three strikes law, they've stolen a slice of pizza, and they're getting a life sentence. I mean, is there a problem with our sentencing guidelines?
Well, yes and no. There's a lot to be said about your comment, but first of all, it's not really very relevant to jail crowding because the length of sentence means that somebody has actually been convicted of a fairly significant crime and is going to spend some time in prison. Jails are pretty much pretrial only and for misdemeanor sentencing, which is usually pretty short, under a year. And the bulk of the populations in jails is pretrial, not sentenced. But the question you ask about the relationship of crime and sentencing length and the pros and cons of all that is an important one. We in this country sentence people to the longest terms that I'm aware of and maybe the longest terms in the world, but certainly the research has shown that there's not a strong relationship between length of sentencing and deterring crime. In fact, the research points to the speed of sentencing as a deterrent to crime rather than the length of sentence. In other words, if you're arrested, tried, and convicted and serve your sentence, whether in labor out in the community or in a custody situation, in an immediate and very short time, just like with a kid at home, the punishment tends to register. If it's a year and a half until the case comes due and then it's plea bargained and you get time served plus another 30 days, doesn't tend to register in the same way at all.
Alan, our time is rapidly coming to a close, but I want to change the subject absolutely completely. I first came across you through a book that you wrote, Second Ticket to the Dance. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, that's a recounting of a heart transplant and a number of aspects of a life about to end that restarted and the exaltation that followed that I more or less had to write after having a heart transplant about 5 years ago and having to take some time off before it because of bad health and after it to recover. And I do remember your review, which I thought was very provoking and interesting.
Have you been happy with reader response?
I've been very happy with reader response and reviews. Got 5 stars on Amazon for whatever that's worth. And it was just a book that had to be written, so it wasn't a book that was I wasn't trying to get rich. I just needed to write it. It was an experience that many people don't have, and I thought could help other people who read it.
Have you ever considered a second book?
Well, I have considered a second book, but I haven't gotten around to it because I'm too busy working. But perhaps over time, assuming that my cardiologist is correct and I've got 20 or 30 years left, I'll find time to write some more.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Okay, let's do a shameless commercial here. Where can people find Second Ticket to the Dance?
Well, it certainly is available on Amazon, and probably the easiest place to get it is on Amazon. And all you got to do is look up Second Ticket to the Dance, and you'll find it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Kindle. The used copies are $3.99. It's pretty easy to find.
And another shameless commercial. I'm sure that we have lots of county supervisors listening in. You know, where can people find the ILPP?
Well, ILPP.com is a good way to get to our website. My email address is real simple. It's Cal, K-A-L, at ILPP.org. And we're easily found on the web and available to talk to counties about their issues and the possibility of our helping them.
Alan, I am hoping that in the not-too-distant future, we can do another program. I'm wondering, what would be the chances of getting, someone that you've helped on the line with us?
Oh, I can probably arrange that. And certainly if your phone is consistently good, we can do another interview anytime.
Sure. It's not my phone. Blame blogging. Blame Blog Talk Radio. Alan, it has been delightful talking with you. And I want to wish you every success with the ILPP and, of course, second ticket to the dance. And I do hope that we can talk again soon.
Okay, Simon. Best of luck to you and happy holidays.
Okay, and happy holidays to you. Till next time, goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.